Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 70 Woo-hoo. Is being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, broadcasting once again from Studio B in beautiful, hot Lawrenceville, Georgia.
But so beautiful.
It is beautiful. Where do you think, is it just the heat and the summer temperatures, hot Atlanta? Is it that there are a lot of musical artists here? Do you know where that may have come from?
I have no idea where it originated from. Do you want to find out, though?
Yeah, find out while I'm continuing to talk here. Okay. So, because that was something when I first moved here, some of the quote-unquote locals, Dr. Henry Wall was my first boss here. He definitely referred to this area as Hotlanta. Your face is like really weird.
Well, because, okay, so like when I Googled it, where did the phrase Hotlanta come from? The first thing that pops up is from Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, the website. And it says the nickname Hotlanta originated from a local slang in Georgia and was popularized by an instrumental piece of the Allman Brothers Band. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It was a track on their legendary live album at Fillmore East.
Huh.
1971.
Check that out. Did they sing that song on my way back to Georgia, or is that somebody else? Oh, Atlanta. Wow, this is really bad. So, I'm singing on our podcast.
Oh, my God. Yeah, please don't do that. So then there's another thing on Wikipedia that says the piece appears only on live albums. It evolved out of a jam session when the Allman Brothers guitarist, okay, Dickie Betts got the idea for the melody line. So obviously mixing the words hot in Atlanta doesn't say like why. Here? Say what?
Does it have the melody line listed there?
No. I mean, I'm sure we can find that too. Okay.
All right. So anyway, as you're continuing to do your...
like who even were the Allman Brothers?
Really? Wow. I know who they are. I could not name probably any of their songs, if I'm being honest.
I thought they were like folk country, but they're totally a rock band.
Southern rock from Atlanta, Georgia.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh.
Apparently.
Wow.
Formed in Jacksonville.
Greg Allman was the lead singer.
Yep. Dickie Betts, Barry Oakley.
I saw a guy when I was coming to work today, which today is Sunday. That looked kind of like Greg Allman. I was probably a mile from the clinic, and there's an older gentleman, I think, running with a red baseball cap. He had long white hair down to his shoulders.
Oh, my gosh.
Big, round, white-rimmed sunglasses, a red shirt on, long black pants, and bright green leggings. And he's just running down Georgia 20. Not down the road, but alongside it. I just like, oh my gosh.
Sounds like he's from Hotlanta.
Yeah, this is kind of like seeing those cats on leashes when all this whole COVID thing started.
Oh,
so,
gosh. COVID news. Well, that was a nice diversion, wasn't
it? Yeah,
yeah.
So we continue last week's theme of talking about absolutely nothing. Local news. So I listed a couple things.
Okay.
Gwinnett County Schools. Today was the deadline, if you live in Gwinnett County, to let them know whether your kid will be going to public school or homeschooled or what. I don't really know more than that.
I don't know more than that either. I just know that I heard some people within the clinic talking about it. It's kind of a scary thing. Don't you think, as a parent? Like, I don't obviously have school-aged kids, and your kids go to a private school. So it's a little bit different there. Like, you obviously have much more of a say in a smaller population. But, like, a public county school, like, if you depended on your kids to somewhat go to school while you're at work, and
but
now
yet you're
you
afraid
have to,
of them getting
COVID, it's a very scary situation. And, like, then you think about, like, those kindergarten parents. Like, you are supposed to be sending your kid off to kindergarten. It's, like, supposed to be so exciting. And so, then you're like, what
Dr.
the
Williams
heck?
And I talked about this a couple of days ago, that kindergarten is not mandatory. And so probably a very wise move for her to keep her kid home, at least temporarily.
Did she talk about what she's going to do for childcare? Is it just going to be like a daycare type thing?
Her husband stays home. I'm assuming the same thing. But gotcha. The whole childcare, daycare, that's a whole other issue that we're going to deal with whenever school gets back in.
For sure.
Because there are going to be daycares that aren't open. And fortunately, we have not had a problem with our veterinarians being able to show up to work. But a couple of my VMG mates, Mark, particularly in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. has 3 or 4 veterinarians out because there's no daycare, no childcare for their kids.
So that's interesting. And I mean, I feel like I was so well versed on this when it all came to pass the first time, but the Families First Coronavirus Relief Act basically gives those parents 80 hours of paid leave. So what happens after the 80 hours? Do they go on a medical leave? So there is this extended FMLA, but at what point? I mean, that only gives them an extra 12 weeks. Yeah. So when does that...
I meant to ask, I talked to Cousin Chris yesterday, actually, and I meant to ask him, because he's in the service industry, mm-hmm. and he's been he was out of work for a long time. They kind of reopened somewhat curbside drive-through, mm-hmm. and then now they're closed again. And
this is in Texas, right? So yeah. Texas is one of the harder hit states.
But I meant to
ask
him about like the whole unemployment thing, because he should be all on top of that. But 26 weeks is what they were going to pay initially?
Yeah, so it was
half a year.
13 at first. It was like a max of 13, and I believe it got extended.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it got extended that way in every state. Because remember, like when they first were doing the, and I feel like we're talking about this like we really know, and I really don't know. But originally, they were only going to provide it for 13 weeks, that extra income, but it had to be approved by the state. So like a bunch of people got back paid originally.
It was lovely. Yeah.
And then because the state was still kind of deciding. And so I don't know if that extension is a state thing, a federal thing, or a combination of the two. Yeah. So
anyway, just we continue to not want to have to talk about this, but it's on the forefront of everybody's minds. And big news. So next thing I was going to just mention, I don't think we mentioned that we're getting closer to finalizing a new civil engineering plan to add more parking at Russell Ridge. And
desperately needed, for
the
sure.
staff here we've been battling this for a year or two, but
it's gotten worse over the last couple of months.
Our staff parking, we are like not double, triple, but we're quadruple parking. Mm-hmm. And if somebody needs to go to lunch or needs to leave early, it typically is 4 or 5 staff members having to move their car to let somebody out. Yeah.
Part of that, right, is like we've dedicated our front parking spaces to be socially distant.
Yep.
So every other space is now marked for clients to do curbside care. And then other than that, there are 3 parking spaces that are available that our staff are allowed to park in. And so a lot of staff have asked the question, like, well, why can't I park in the half space or the middle space? And the biggest reason is it's complicated to get pets in and out of cars when there's cars next to them. But even more so, like when we get really busy, we actually need those spaces for clients.
Yeah.
We have
they double
six
up and we have 6 dedicated marked spots, but on our internal where are our clients board, we have 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5. And
yes.
So, the other day, we'd just been so busy, but I looked out the other day and all the spots were full and everybody was just handling it and taking care of it.
I don't know if we talked about this, but being full and being busy is like a really good problem to have when you're a business, right? As long as you can maintain your efficiencies, which I think we do pretty well on. But one of the biggest topics of my VMG managers meeting that I had last Wednesday was what are people doing with new clients? And I would tell you probably 50 to 60% of them aren't taking new clients.
Yeah.
And I think that's so weird.
So where are those clients going, right?
Somewhere locally. But apparently they have such a huge regular client base that they feel like they're not able to see new clients they're doing a disservice to their current client base.
Which I can understand that, but our philosophy is when it gets busy, just buckle down and work harder and smarter.
Yeah, for sure.
So So yeah, that's kind of a cool new thing. Hopefully, I told a couple of staff members this week, like, this is super exciting, but it's not going to happen in a month or even two. So this is going to be most likely a late fall project, but we're going to totally redo the back parking lot, resurface it, do the front, kind of repair and resurface. And then we're going to add, I think, 10 spots on the side coming off the access road. So
that'll be exciting.
That will give us, 16, 10, 16, 42 parking spots.
Oh, wow.
So
that's great.
Yeah.
Great problem to have. Hopefully we can
fill them. Jen, CSR, Jenna, I put Jen on the page, but
Jenna,
was talking today about her next appointment and scheduling a C-section. So she's getting really, really close.
Her actual due date is August 2nd, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, any day now, we're almost within 2 weeks, and we, I think, mentioned last week that we had to, postponed or canceled the baby shower. So mm-hmm. I would encourage all of our GVA employees, especially those here at Russell Ridge, to reach out to them with a card, a gift, encouragement, whatever you would like to do beforehand to kind of help.
So she'll be the first.
Jen and Dr. Connor.
She'll be the first due of four pregnant staff members within the GVA family.
I remember the fourth now, but I was thinking Heather B., who is due last.
Yes, as far as I understand.
And then at Appalachie,
Marissa, who's a receptionist or CSR.
And then
I feel like she and Dr. Connor are going to be a close,
very similar
tie for second, yeah.
Yeah, and then Dr. Connor, bless her heart. So I think it was Friday. Yeah, it was Friday. She was like, I've got to go home. It's Thursday. I just cannot stay here. Do y'all need me? If you need me, I'm here. I am done. And so
was it 6 o'clock?
It was like 6:30. Yeah. It's like 6:30. And we're like, please go home. So she has been a trooper.
Last Thursday was kind of a busy day.
Yeah, definitely super pregnant in a good way, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not want to be in her position working as hard as we are these days.
So speaking about Dr. Connor, right? So she is our newest graduate, still our youngest doctor, doing very, very well. I actually mean to tell her on a daily basis how, I don't know if inspirational is the right word or admirable she is about being a new doctor, being pregnant.
Is it admirable or admirable?
Whatever, same difference.
I think that's the right word.
Admirable. But, I mean, she just gives it her all every day that she's here, and it's very admirable. But I don't think I've actually said that to her, but I mean to. Like, I think it a lot.
So we should, like, force her to subscribe to the podcast just to hear praise.
I mean, she
like,
probably
this
has...
this is where you get your praise.
She probably has other things to do, right?
So, all right, so that's a great lead-in to the Word of the Week.
Word of the Week.
So, Word of the Week is listed in front of you. Do you know how to say it? I had to correct the spelling. I'm like, the C is weird here. Like, there's a weird C, and I'm like, well, it's in the sill, but... And then I looked it up in Dorland's Medical Dictionary, and I blew it. So, do you know how to pronounce that word?
I do, but I'm going to ask you about the spelling. Is the C in place of the S, or it's supposed to be
inserted between
there.
The S and
okay.
the M?
That's how I think I would guess to spell it. The word of the week is desmetacil.
Desmetacil.
Did I say it right, or do you have a southern twang to it?
You are spot on with desmetacil. D E S, insert C, M E T O C O E L E. Do you know what the definition of desmetacil is?
I don't.
Okay, so I looked this up because I know what it is, like clinically in my mind.
Yeah, like how do you define it?
I'm not going to mess this up, right?
Yeah.
So I looked it up, and by definition, so this is Greek. It means herniation of decimase membrane.
Oh, really?
I'm like, wow, that is outstanding. That tells me nothing
so,
unless I know what decimase membrane is.
Right, but that O seal at the end of it, so we see that in other
mucosils.
I guess that's all I can think of. But you see it in like salivary.
Sialicil.
Yeah. So you see it in a lot of other things. So what does the O seal mean? Because that to me would mean like a pocket of pus or like a firm substance. I don't know how to explain it.
It's kind of a... So I'm looking right now because I thought I knew, but I really don't. Seal is like I was going to say a bladder collection, but decimase membrane plus Greek deli hernia. So we may have to look. We'll look that up.
The O-seal part?
Yeah, I'll look that up in a minute. Or you look it up while I'm talking. Because the reason this is the word of the week is Dr. Connor did, who we just spoke about, did her first eye enucleation, removal of the eye, the entire globe of the eye, this past Friday with a little bit of help from me, but she did an awesome job.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she enucleated the eye is because the dog had a very deep corneal ulcer,
mm-hmm.
ulcerated surface of the eye, and the dog had a desmetocele. Desmase membrane, which is kind of a rubber band-like membrane on the very back side of the cornea, separating the cornea from the anterior chamber of the eye. It is meant, I don't really know what it's meant for, but one of its functions is if you have a very deep ulcer, it will fill that ulcer and kind of elastically plug the hole, if you will.
So you don't lose your aqueous.
Yeah, but
that's interesting.
Usually once it gets to that point, you wind up having to enucleate unless you can go in and do like a third eyelid flap or corneal flap or suture the cornea, which is kind of tricky business.
Sure.
Seal means hole.
Hernia.
Hernia, okay.
So that's interesting, yeah. Right? So
okay, hole. So that's, I mean, similar.
I
hernia
guess.
Is a hole in a body wall.
But when you're thinking about like a salivary mucus seal, I mean, I guess it is a herniated.
It's like this baggy collection, though, is the way.
Yeah, but it's not like the gland has a hole in it, right? And then it's herniated, and so then you get this metaseal.
But there's a hole in the salivary duct that causes this big bag.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Here we are, like, breaking down these words, right?
Break it down. So anyway, word of the week, desmetocele. For anybody that calls in and spells it correctly on the first time, you get 5 points.
Well, you already spelled it out for them. But do you remember last week how we were talking about there's like to be a specific type of chef, you have to know how to cook an egg more than 100 ways. And I was like, for sure, we've exhausted all the I.
Oh, no.
Number names.
And here we go today.
Here we go again.
I'm sad. Ocular ophthalmological terms. It's very hard to say for me. Tons.
Yeah, there's a
ton
for sure.
Tons. So,
I used to think that as a technician that ophthalmology would be a very cool specialty to get into. However, I don't think that you would see all the cool stuff. I think you would see a lot of the same, kind of like dermatology in pets. You see the same old stuff over and over and over again.
But you do kind of have to relate it to other systems because other body systems do affect, every other system. So.
Sure.
Okay. So, we're going to get into stories.
Okay.
But
because last week we did not.
We're going to get into stories if we have time, which we will not. We'll come back to this, but the last couple of weeks we introduced the phrase or tagline, healthy pet, happy life.
Yes, thank you, Asher Miller.
Here at My Georgia Vet, we believe in the phrase, happy pet, healthy life. Or
well, you read it wrong again.
Healthy pet, gosh. We believe...
It's like literally on the paper and you read
like
it
right
incorrectly.
In front, but I was looking at you, I was like really preaching. We believe in the phrase, healthy pet, happy life, which kind of means the fact that a healthy pet equals a happy life for the pet and for the people that own the pet.
Sure, within a symbiotic relationship.
And so one thing I want to start doing or talking about as a topic of discussion, this is going to be kind of our headline topic, but I do think we could share, like Holly in Nevada has told me multiple times, like, oh, just give us tips on, you know, how to do this or deal with that or what to do if this happens, which is very hard because we see 40 of these things a day. But I do think we can make this a topic of discussion. New puppy and kitten care, vaccinations, lifestyle vaccinations. Why does my dog need an annual exam and lab work? Why does my senior dog need to be seen twice a year versus once a year? Why is it so important for my senior dog to get blood work at least once a year? Why, if my dog is on a chronic medication, do we need to be looking at lab work to evaluate liver, kidneys, etc.? So
sure.
I do think that's kind of where we need to go with our new phrase that I can't seem to remember.
So we'll have a small segment within each podcast. Yeah, so like Healthy Pet, Happy Life.
Today's topic with Healthy Pet, Happy Life is lifestyle vaccinations.
Okay.
You know, here's the core vaccines. If your pet is in the woods and you go hiking.
Next week, you want to talk about it today?
No, I was just giving examples. Oh, okay. Then maybe we need to blah, 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 blah. So
that'll be the topic next week.
Yep. So we're definitely going to include that next week.
So today is an introduction of the new segment called Healthy Pet, Happy Life,
or HPHL if you're a millennial vet school student.
Oh, gosh. They do like talking acronyms.
Yeah. Hey, we need to do a TKBO. We've talked about this before.
Yes.
Dr. Hines, I'll throw her under the bus. Like, LL, blah, 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 PhD. I'm just like, oh, my gosh. What are y'all talking about?
What was it the other day? And beating up on Dr. Connor now, I guess. But she had made an appointment for a patient, and she said something along the lines of elevated LES. And everyone, including the doctors, are looking around at each other like,
what are you talking about?
What's an elevated LES? Hey, does anyone know what an elevated LES means? And like, the only thing we can come up with is elevated liver enzymes.
Yeah, liver enzymes.
Yes.
Yeah. But I do think I've seen that somewhere. But who uses that?
Apparently, the millennial graduates. I don't know. Anyways.
So, what does the EAG stand for?
Express anal glands.
So, we do the same thing, right? It's just, it's more habitual and normal for them.
Yeah.
PPDH, you know, I saw on the record today.
I don't know what that is.
Peritoneal diaphragmatic hernia. We'll talk about that next time.
Okay, I understand now.
Hernia through the abdominal wall of peritoneal contents going into the pericardial sac. Super rare, but not that uncommon. I used to hate it when people would say stuff like that. Super rare, but not that uncommon in cats as a congenital abnormality. So
that's funny.
Okay, stories from last week we didn't get to.
Okay.
I'll let you run with these.
So I wanted to talk about copperheads because I feel like here in our area in Georgia, we're seeing a few more quote-unquote snake bites. I don't know if they're all copperhead bites or not, but we do see our fair share. And this I thought was interesting because it points out the fact that as the summer months get warmer, copperhead snakes are giving birth to new babies. The babies are the ones that really pack a punch, and they're most likely the ones that your dog is going to be bitten by. Because they are more venomous than the others, and they're
because
also
the volume,
ones,
or
I guess I don't know if they're meant to be more venomous because they're younger and a little bit more susceptible to prey. I don't know, but they do have a more venomous bite, and so oftentimes, if your pet does get bit by a snake, you should assume it is a copperhead in this area. Obviously, if you can catch a photo of the snake, please don't try to catch the snake.
Yeah, don't catch the snake. That's a good
idea. But a photo of the snake so that we can somewhat identify it.
We had a client this past week that she called and you know wanted to bring her dog in. Oh my God, my dog just got bit by a copperhead, and can y'all see fill in the blank name? And the receptionist said, okay, well, just let me hang up with you. We'll give you a call right back after we talk to a doctor. So they came back and we talked about anti-venom. Do we have it? Do we not? Do we need it? Which we don't, in my opinion, for copperheads. That's a rattlesnake thing. And so the doctor says, well, let me go call Mrs. Owner. And he came back kind of chuckling like, well, she's going to bring the dog in. But when I called her, I'm like, you know, how's it going? And, oh, it's good. I'm out here. I'm chopping up this snake. And he said literally as he's talking to her.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is Gracie's owner. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like she's out there like killing the snake and beating the snake and killing and chopping. And I just chuckled. I'm like, I would not do that. I would be like, get me away from the snake.
I would be a little terrified as well. I'm kind of running. But interesting that you say that, right? So we see more dogs with snake bites than cats and that kind of thing. And the reason being, I think, is because they're more curious. So the dog you're talking about is a young white shepherd, and she is full of it, right? So most oftentimes they're going to get bitten in the face
or
the foot.
Typically front leg, would you agree?
Yes, because
she got bit on the back leg.
Most likely playing with it.
Yeah, they're like, what is this thing on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
So face, front leg, underside.
Yep.
Or back leg in this case.
I would say in the back leg. Would you agree that maybe they're just turning walking to run, through?
Either walking or turning to run.
Maybe. But usually we see them, I've seen face. More in the face, yeah. the muzzle, and then the face swells. I mean, and instantly, yeah. you know, it's a snake bite.
Yeah. They're sniffing, investigating, yep. trying to see what's going
Curious
on.
Curious little creatures. And cats, I think, are smarter. They probably just know to leave it the heck alone.
Probably right. I did pull an article from this week's AVMA news brief about, dog in Texas, 2-year-old healthy dog in Texas. Texas tested positive for SARS-CoV-2. The veterinarian wanted it tested because members of the family were positive, but yet the dog was completely asymptomatic. I guess he or she just wanted to know, but it was a little bitty dog again. It was a Yorkie, I think.
So there's been other reports of other dogs here in Georgia. In fact, Joyce, our groomer, she's a pretty avid listener. And whenever she hears something, she usually texts me. So sorry, Joyce, we didn't talk about it a few weeks ago, but, you know, she'll text me and ask me like, hey, did you hear about this one? Or do you know about this dog, you know, becoming positive or, whatnot. But her latest text from July 2nd said there was a case in Georgia with a mixed breed dog that came down with Corona. So I didn't look into the story, but it's interesting for sure that there are more dogs and cats becoming diagnosed with it, but it's kind of like the people. The more you test, the more positives you'll get, you know, you'll see it yeah. more. But still, we've not really seen any passing of disease from pets to other people.
Pets that are sick nor transmitting it back to people. I don't think we are going to.
I think everyone's still saying to be precautious, right? Like if you have a sick person in the house, to keep the pets quarantined away from that person. And that just seems smart. I mean, you wouldn't go use the same blanket that they were using or drink from the same cup. So you probably should not share the same pet. I know that sounds silly, but...
All right. I'm going to let you sign us off.
Oh, are we done?
But I think we're done. Did you have one more story to talk about?
No, there were just the one comment here that I thought was interesting is in Florida, and I'm sure there are other states as well, but I haven't really looked into it. But this was off the AVMA Smart Brief as well. But Florida now allows pets to be included in restraining orders. And I think we talked about this before with the AHISMA House and some other local groups for families that are struggling through domestic violence and that kind of thing. The story reads that basically a lot of people in domestic violence situations don't leave, often for their children or for their pets, because they've been threatened. Like, if you leave, I'm going to XYZ to the kid or XYZ to the pet. And so oftentimes they stay because they feel very responsible. And so now in Florida, if people are looking to get out of those situations, they have a bit more, I guess, support behind them now, including their pets and restraining orders. So I thought that was fantastic. I thought it was great. It's unfortunate that domestic violence is still a thing, if you will, but it will probably always be a thing. But obviously, the more we can give these people tools to get out of their situation, the better. And by allowing pets to be included in that, I think it's just one step further. So
yeah, very cool. That is a good story.
Yeah.
So I'm still working on our new tagline from Asher, and I'm trying to
get it
right.
Did you ask Asher?
No, I probably should, since he's the one that came up with it. But so I tried to, you know, plug it in earlier and I got it all wrong, but
yeah,
let's try. There's two versions here.
Okay.
At My Georgia Vet, our goal is healthy pet, happy life. It's close, but it's not.
It's close. You're so close.
At My Georgia Vet, our mission At My Georgia Vet, our mission is a healthy pet, happy life.
Still close, but it's not there.
It's not there. Okay. Yeah. Anybody has a suggestion, please call, phone, email, text.
Comment on podcast.
Comment, let us know.
Instagram is what I meant. Yeah. So, I'll go ahead and sign us out then. Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets, which we are at this point getting maybe one new follower a week. I know, it's exciting. I wish we could get more, but hey, it's a long game. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it, and remember, Without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.